hello, welcome. You're listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and sitting here in this tiny, tiny room that has been broken into twice now...
With a tiny Scrabble board
is Ben Biltman. Ben, thank you for sitting down and doing this after a tough, tough Bears loss.
Tough Bears loss, yeah. We should let it be known that if we sound sad, it's because we just watched it. We don't even have to specify which debilitating Bears loss, but... It happened.
Yeah, so. That's why I started drinking at 11:07 in the p.m. Oh my on Lord. A Sunday.
Is that what time it is?
It's 11:07. We've been watching a...
Damn night games.
We need to just ban the Bears from night games. We're 0-4 this year? This is absurd.
Not going well. We need to ban Ron Turner from night games.
I agree. We need to ban Ron
all
Turner.
All games, yeah.
Yes, okay. We're not saying murder the man. We're saying don't let him in the Soldier Field. Yeah. And no internet access or phone lines.
No, yeah.
Just like a walkie-talkie to family and friends.
I think there'd be better coaching if there were, like, threats of prison terms if it didn't go well. Like, Ron Turner sucks enough that he's going to have to do a year hard time.
Because that's mean to all of Detroit. Because if you're going by that logic, all of Detroit and all of Cleveland has to be in prison. And that's already sad.
But they wouldn't have gotten so bad if that threat was hanging out. They would not suck that much. They thought they were going to jail.
That's debatable. I didn't bring Ben on to talk about the National Football League, one of the greatest leagues in the world. I brought Ben on because he's a very, very talented and young and fetching young man with a wonderful beard and an even more wonderful hat.
I'm very dashing, yes.
He's a dashing man in a Dick Butkus jersey, a player that has been long retired before either of us were born.
That's true.
I know Ben for a long time. Ben was one of the cameramen and the editor on The Shuffle, the film that he helped me make that I'm somewhat proud of. So, how is that working with me? Because I had never done a film before, and you have.
Yeah.
And you've worked on, like, real film sets and the like.
Yeah. It's a whole different game with you. It's more akin to, like, documentary filmmaking because there's such a small crew, and it's also just sort of, you know, it's much quicker, you know, and there's a lot less, shooting for, safety and stuff like that. When we went to edit, it was like, okay, well, this is what we have, which is definitely different than what I'm used to, but it turned out well, and I think, everything is a kind of a learning experience. I think, if nothing else, it's a good test for our workflow and stuff like that. I think this next upcoming film is going to be we're going to hit our stride even more.
I like to think that. I'm glad that you're saying relatively positive things, because I kind of force you to help me with this one.
Yeah, well, that's how I like it. I'm a passive guy. I like to be forced to do things. And
that sounds awful. You realize that.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. One of the reasons why I brought Ben on is Ben and I have... Ben's a musician, and Ben's a very, very talented musician, and I am not a talented musician, yet I played rock and roll shows, and it was completely different than the type of music that Ben liked, and I figured if we worked together, something relatively good could come out of it, or am I completely off topic here?
Somehow we're friends, despite the fact that we have very different approaches to anything.
That is correct.
So we find balance somewhere in the middle.
So let's talk about your approaches. What are some of your favorite films? Why did you end up going to film school?
Favorite films, I really like Annie Hall. I like High Fidelity. I generally favor what I consider to be very natural and dark comedies. So like the films that I mentioned are basically what have always attracted me, kind of showing the, humor of reality, and I don't want anybody to think I'm a fan of reality television. When I say reality, I just mean sort of like Seinfeld, that it seems like a good balance between the bizarreness of actual life and the way that David Lynch will show stuff being...
You just dumped, you just jumped from Woody Allen to David Lynch.
Right.
It's quite a leap.
It's kind of a leap, yeah. That's sort of where I fall, is somewhere between Lynch and Woody Allen. Woody Allen showing what is funny about real life, and David Lynch saying, people will talk about how, David Lynch films, this doesn't make sense or something. He'll go, well, real life doesn't make sense, so I'm saying a lot, but I'm not accustomed to being interviewed.
Out of all the verbal fillers in the world, it's not the worst.
It's not. It's It's close.
And as your second interview ever, or in the night, actually, you're doing a great job.
I'll do okay.
You sound good. You don't sound rushed, unlike me. You're not fumbling over your words.
Good. That's good. But yeah, so somewhere, you know, the bizarre and humorous of the true truth and beauty are what I'm seeking in film. So that's why I went to film school.
But you didn't stay in film school.
I did not stay in film school.
Why did you leave film school?
I left film school for a couple of reasons. For starters, I felt like I wasn't really learning anything that I didn't know. You know, I was learning a few technical things, but in terms of, you know, learning to direct film is sort of like, you know, I can learn more just from watching films. And I felt like I've always had two very strong passions being, you know, filmmaking and that kind of art, and also songwriting and music. And I just felt like songwriting had begun to assert itself more strongly. I felt like that was something that I could really learn.
When you say it asserted itself, what does that mean?
Just that it became a stronger passion. I felt like I had a more singular view of things. Like, there is a Woody Allen and there is a David Lynch, and I don't know that there is somebody out there doing what I want to do musically, and it just started to speak louder to me in terms of, like, that this is what I really need to do, and this is where my voice is most unique and positive. So I decided to do that, and so far, it's been, you know, coming up roses.
Is it really?
Well, I mean, it's a relative term, but, you know, I'm encouraged. I don't feel like I made a mistake. I feel like the universe has positive things for me, and that I'm, you know, on the precipice of a vast ocean of wonder.
When you say things like that, are you a spiritual person at all? Or you just say that because it sounds good?
Both. I'm literary and... No, I don't mean that necessarily. I guess I mean that more... it's just a sense that I get that I'm right on the edge of breaking into some really good work, but I don't know.
You say on the edge of breaking in, you mean the actual songs that you write will be better, or do you mean someone will notice it and acknowledge it?
Both. You know, like having access to better... You know, I'm playing with some really talented musicians right now who I wouldn't have been able to get in the same room necessarily a couple of years ago, and just having all the pieces kind of come together where I'm maturing as a songwriter and I have, you know, people are willing to work with me and the word is getting out a little bit, and I'm kind of getting there where I think this next thing is going to be maybe the really big one that, you know, means I can wear more sport coats and get some golf clubs and stuff.
So. What's the goal?
The goal is to do nothing but just create things, you know, to be able to just be a wholly creative person and, you know, just hang around my cabin in the woods playing the piano all the time and, you know, thinking deep thoughts. Stuff
you do
like
not
that.
Have a cabin in the woods.
No, I don't, but that's part of the goal.
And you live in Wicker Park.
I live in Wicker Park, yeah. Which is, I'm not that hip, but I'm there. So.
What if that doesn't happen?
If that doesn't happen, I will probably teach literature. Because I would be too bitter to teach music, so I would rather just teach literature.
Why would you want to teach literature?
Well, because I'm essentially an escapist. I, you know, would like to just hide in books, and, you know, if I'm a professional book hider, that would be good. I'll just spend, you know, for the next 2 weeks class, we're going to hide in The Brothers Karamazov or The Sound and the Fury or, you know, whatever else. You know, and I have a pretty voracious passion for literature as well, so I don't know.
Where do you think that comes from?
My mother was a second grade teacher, and my father was a band director, but I think my mother read to me too much as a child, and I have just ever since, swear to God, I had every book ever that you could want as a second grader.
Why did you want to follow music and film, but not creative writing or something in that field?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just something I felt like I'd always done.
You've always done writing?
I've always done film and music and stuff. From a very young age, I was very, I was a shameless plagiarist, but, you know...
In terms of what?
Well, like, age 9, I'd started writing songs and, screenplays, And, like, there was always jokes that I'd stolen out of Fletch and Fletch Lives and stuff like that. But I would sort of, like, one of my early screenplays was a film about a terrorist who everything he did turned out good. So he was, like, the worst terrorist ever. He would, like, blow up a building, and it was scheduled to be demolished, so he ended up saving the city a bunch of money and stuff like that. Everything he would do would turn out wrong. But I stole a bunch of jokes from Better Off Dead with John Cusack, where his mother, like, knocks a chair out from under him, and he accidentally hangs himself. That was the end of the film. So instead of recovering, my main character actually died. But, and I would steal all these obscure, like, well, not obscure, obscure if you were nine. I'd write all these, I had this blue notebook, and I wrote all these Steely Dan lyrics and Elton John lyrics and stuff like that, and I'd shown to my friends, like, hey, I wrote this song, it's called Reelin' in the Years.
And you were nine.
And I was nine, and nobody knew it because they were nine, too. and it was, you know, I would feel bad about it if I didn't feel like it was a good learning experience to look at song structure and lyrics and stuff like that. And I swear to God, I've logged more hours listening to, like, kind of classic, you know, I don't know what you call that, jazz rock records, you know, like early Stevie Wonder and Steely Dan and, you know, Elvis Costello, stuff like that, kind of intelligent pop records than anybody I am aware of.
Do you ever, have you ever rebelled?
No.
Do you want to at all? You never had the desire to, not play intricate chords and...
I rebel against rebels. I think that's what, you know, everybody else was. I was at Delilah's recently, guest DJing, and I feigned ignorance. I pretended that they'd told me that it was a... they told me it was a punk bar, and I thought they said a funk bar. I played all funk tunes, and I was escaped with my life only very, very closely. But yeah, the urge to just sort of... I don't know why I have none of that. I guess my childhood was too happy or something, but I just... I like that kind of, you know... It's the similar stuff that I'm attracted to in films, but that kind of, like, complex wonder of, like, you know, weird chords. It just comes from listening to all the wrong music when you were a little kid. I remember when I started hearing Steely Dan when I was, like, nine, it echoed when I heard it when I was, like, two. I was like, that's the sound I'm looking for. It's, you know... add 9 chords and 13, and I'm sure all your friends are going to be bored with this,
but it's nice.
Weird chord qualities are what my ear is attracted to most of the time, so.
And you're kind of doing that now, you're kind of working on that now with the new band.
I'm getting there. You know, I'm getting to the point where my hands are catching up to my ears and stuff like that, and I'm getting more harmonically mature, and I've got a new band which is called Cave People, and I feel like I'm really, have enough people to really flesh out the sound the way I want it. I'm playing, mostly, like, keyboards and acoustic guitar, and I have another guitar player and another keyboard player and bass and drums, and actually a majority of the band is, directly related to me. The organ,
and you're the youngest guy in the band.
I'm the youngest guy by a factor of about 20 years, I think.
Is that the average?
I'm writing all the tunes. That's the minimum, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's minimum. Oh, maybe Fred is only... I think I was born when Fred went to college.
Okay, so 18 years.
18 years or something like that.
Is that weird?
How much? Not really. I think I have more trouble communicating with people my own age than people...
Do you think it's a skill level thing or a maturity thing? Or both?
Maybe that I'm so immature I can only talk to the very talented because they have to decipher.
Like an idiot savant?
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's actually how we ended up naming the band. It's called Cave People. And I got in an argument with my keyboard player, who's also my father. And I had written a chord that is particularly complex and up for some debate as to what you'd actually call the chord, and he was writing out a chart to somebody. He said, "What is this chord?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, his response was somewhat angry. He said, "There's a difference between art and cave painting." And I, like, first I was very pissed off, and then I decided to adopt that as part of my idiom. So now there's a few other auspicious signs. Me and Fred were at a restaurant, and they had a steak on the menu called it, like, a caveman porterhouse or something. And I said, "Oh, that'd be perfect for us cave people." And then I decided, you know, that's pretty much what we're calling the band.
What does the rest of the band think of the name?
The band,
or do
is
they
a,
care?
I think it's a combination of not caring and being okay with it. I think, you know, everybody's pretty much good with it, you know, every once in a while. You can't please everybody with band names, and that's the deal. If you, from an abstract place to discuss band names, it's very difficult. You know, if somebody said, like, hey, I've got this band, you've never heard the music, and they say, I think we're going to call it the Beatles, but we'll spell it with an A, or, you know, say Talking Heads or Flaming Lips or something. All these names abstractly sound kind of stupid, but when they're, you know, connected up with the music and that's a real thing, you tend to cut them a lot more slack. So.
But when you hear Cave People, you think of intricate chords that are up for debate, played on a Rhodes keyboard and really talented
it's
musicians.
It's really warm sound, too. Yeah, it really is. It's kind of like a mysterious funk kind of like, yeah, I like to think of it as a very like organic intelligentsia kind of thing. Like I think of it as if you took a bunch of like jazz records and like Motown and Stax and like Steely Dan records and all the conventional rock instruments and you left it deep in a forest in the woods and like a gang of roughs found it and studied it for like 20 years, Cave People is what would come out. I think that's the, I call it Northern Soul. It's like forest funk. I don't, you know.
That's, there's a Northern Soul movement of soul music from the Midwest.
Well,
you should know about. It's great music.
I'll find out. Somebody will tell me.
Number two, that's like your third or fourth reference to the woods.
I do like woods. I think it might be the David Lynch, Twin Peaks and me. I did spend a lot of time in the woods as a kid. I grew up near woods, and my family would always go up north to this cabin in Minocqua.
Is that in Wisconsin or Michigan?
Yeah, that's in Wisconsin, close to Michigan. But yeah, it's...
Well, that's pretty far north.
Yeah, it's pretty far north. It's right on the cusp. It looks like the UP, but it's technically in Wisconsin. But yeah, something about pine trees getting north of that tree line where it stops being deciduous and it starts being evergreen. Man, I really like it out there. I did a lot of canoeing this summer, which is not something I've done in a great many years, but kind of actively pursuing my rustic wanderlust is something that's been pretty fun for me.
Why didn't you go to school in a place like that? Why did you stay in Chicago?
I've always felt like I wanted to have access to... There's not a lot of session musicians in the far north or anything like that.
Let me cut you off real quick.
Okay.
Why session musicians? You've always been the kind of guy... I've known you for quite a long time. I don't think you've ever really been in a band. You've always
This is a real band.
This
now.
Is a That's, real band, but like you said,
it's a real band made of people who don't play in real bands. It's like,
but it's also made of a band. It's also a band where you're writing all the songs,
right? Yeah, I don't know.
So why is that?
It's just that general lone wolf tendency. I don't know. I just have always felt like I'm basically self-centered. I want all the attention for just me. And
are you being
like,
sarcastic?
Yeah, I am usually, okay. But no, I'm not really sure. It's just always the way it's presented itself. It's always seemed like more of a struggle to try and get, you know, like, my pals to, you know, I guess it just never presented itself. If I felt like in the room of my friends, everybody was, I don't know, I just have never, it just never presented itself that way, and I it's not intentional. I'd happily play in, you know, the Beatles or something, but they didn't invite me, you know, so...
Do you think that you're ever going to have a situation where you're going to want to play with other people? Where it's going to be hard for you to write a song on your own? Or because you still occasionally take lessons, correct?
Yeah, and I work with...
You're in school for it. So like right now you're in a situation where you're forced to play and forced to collaborate.
Forced to collaborate.
Once that's over,
extent.
Is this going to change? Or
no, I think there's always elements of that. And I, despite the fact that we're not like, you know... It's not like A Hard Day's Night and we're all living, we're sleeping in bunk beds and stuff like that. There is a collaborative. Whenever you teach someone your music, there's collaboration and there's discussion and there's, you know, like, I'm not sure that bridge is functioning the way you want it to be. And specifically, I mean, really everybody that I play with, they have a large, even though the synthesis of the song usually starts with me and I write all the lyrics and stuff like that, they do have an effect on the way that the tune eventually presents itself, and I'll go into a rehearsal with an idea of the way that I want the tune to turn out, and it'll evolve, and being open to that kind of evolution is something that I really am getting a hang of these days, as opposed to going like, no, this is the way I drum it on my knees, and that's the way I expect it done here.
But is that only because you're playing with talented guys?
No, I don't think so. It's maybe 50-50. They're playing stuff that is like, wow, that really adds a lot as opposed to what I was singing. But also just being able to go, like, you know, just being a little less tight about it. You know, I can be a little bit of a control freak or whatever, and being able to go, like, you know, it doesn't have to be the way I originally intended it. And I'm sure you would agree with your current film that that's sort of letting things take a shape of their own.
Definitely.
Working with
you has definitely been a good thing for me. Because when we started the film, I didn't know who was going to edit it. And then you're like, oh, I know how to use Final Cut. And that made you the editor.
Yeah.
But more importantly, we had to sit together with Kevin for, what, 3 months, essentially?
Yeah. It was like being in NAMM. I don't know why it took us so long. I think
it took us so long because you hadn't used
such a learning curve.
You hadn't used the program.
Well, and we didn't really know how to work together. Now we kind of have a good idea of, like, this is what I need you to do.
Yeah.
And then I can just bang it out. Yeah. And that's. We need to start a production company called Bang It Out.
I really don't think that's a good name.
No?
No.
Maybe not for this kind of
Let's stop talking about the music, because I do want to have you on the show again once the album or EP or whatever is done.
No, it should be a full length. I think it's going to be at least 8 tracks. So
we could close this thing now, and we could end with a question, or we can talk about the TV show, or we could wait the next time and talk about the TV show and tease it now.
We can talk about the show now. I'm having fun.
Okay, because initially you didn't want to do this.
I was a little reticent. I didn't want to sound like a schmuck.
I do not. You sound smarter than almost any other guest we have here.
You can put a poll on the on this when it goes on the website. Like,
I will never do that.
Is Ben a schmuck? And it'll
no.
be like a resounding 3 people will say no, and I'll be like, right, okay.
Here's my problem with continuing. This is what we're going to do the first time ever. We're going to pause the show.
Okay, you have to pee or something?
No. I'm really sad because I keep... Ben is wearing a Dick Butkus jersey, one of the top 3 linebackers in Bears history. I'd say number 1, number 2 being Singletary, number 3 being Urlacher. Up for debate. Whatever.
So Butkus is 2?
No, Butkus is number 1.
Oh, Butkus is
in the top 3.
Singletary.
Well, he's number 1. Then Singletary, number 2.
Okay.
That's my guess.
I think
it's pretty accurate. I mean, you could throw in Briggs, and you could alternate
Briggs and
Urlacher.
Yeah.
There's a lot of whatever.
Depends on the year. Okay.
Exactly. All I'm saying is I want to pause this now because the Hawks are currently playing Vancouver.
You want to know
I'm a big
going
hockey
on.
Fan.
Let's
I'm going to run
out.
And check the score.
I want to know. I'll come with
And we're going to start with the TV show. So
all right, we'll talk about the show.
How about we're going to...
Commercial break.
Let me pause it. Let me mark the note. And around minute 22, we're going to throw in a little bit of Daniel Knox for 10 seconds. We'll come back to you. All right?
You
Let's do this.
I shake hands and make conversation, but I'll make trouble if you want me to.
All right,
to
we're
tell
back.
Me where I was. So.
We're going
to
start a new topic. The Blackhawks won, 1-0.
There you go.
So I'm happy. You're not a Hawks fan, are you?
I'm.
You're not a Hawks fan.
I'm not a Hawks fan. If I was going to like a hockey team, it would be them. And also, I'm pretty into Indians, so. So that's good, but I think, you know...
I don't think the majority of Blackhawks, the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team fans
like
say,
them,
oh, I'm just a fan of Indians.
I just like Indians in general, yeah. So if they happen to be playing hockey, I'm okay with it. Yeah, Bears are a big first, and then, you know, I would say Bears, Cubs, Blackhawks, you know, early 90s Bulls are somewhere in it. Yeah, that's the problem, is that the Bulls are only on there because of the early 90s. Otherwise, I'd be a Lakers fan because of the movie Fletch, exclusively because of Chevy Chase.
And if I was a fan of rape, I'd also be a fan of the Lakers, thanks to Kobe.
Oh, I don't know.
See, I will go there.
We don't have to go there.
I'm sassy like that.
You're
okay.
Very sassy.
That sounded so not genuine.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir, but...
that also did not sound genuine.
No comment.
Okay,
no comment
so...
this time.
While we were burning DVDs of the film to send out to film festivals, Ben and I started watching. I started watching, thanks to Ben, episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
This is true.
And we had a long conversation, and then Ben had this long kind of monologue about why he thought he should do a show similar to Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Well, it's a reference, yeah. I don't think it's
And then I see Ben, and then I don't see him for a month, and then he's saying, I'm doing a TV show.
I just called him up, said I'm doing a show.
And we really didn't talk much about it, so I'm going to be learning along with you, kind
of
listener.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Well, I'll explain it to you. Well, there's a few factors at play, and they're all kind of coming to a point, which is that I think I should have a show. For starters, I mean, when I stopped being a filmmaker, when I stopped being a film major, You know, film and music, to a large extent, are not the kind of professions where they're checking your diploma at the door. It doesn't really matter whether or not I stop being a film major. I always sort of thought there could be a scenario in which I would continue doing that stuff. But I always thought that it would be kind of, you know, I've already made it as a musician and whatever, and, you know, people would say, like, if, you know, the Flaming Lips have made a film, you know, like Tom Waits has done some plays that he's written, stuff like that. That kind of thing, that I'm just sort of a unilaterally creative person, and that's still a strong abiding interest for me. So, this basically came about, I was talking some shit at a party. I don't know why.
I like how your music talk is so intellectual, I want to be in the woods, and all your film stuff, I was talking some shit at a party.
No, it came about, I was talking some shit at a party, and I said, I told somebody, they asked me what was up, and I said, well, getting my own show on HBO, it's going to be pretty good, like a cross between Flight of the Conchords and Curb Your Enthusiasm, and like we started talking about it as though this were a real thing, and it kind of, you know, I got the itch, I was like, you know, that would actually be a pretty good show, and I when I play solo especially, I always need to stall, and I start saying things that people think are funny and are actually sad, and everyone laughs at me, and so they say things like, you know, like, oh, you should do stand-up comedy, and it's an odd experience to play a show of music, and people come up to you afterwards going like, you should really do comedy.
I'm waving you off here.
What?
You have no idea how many times I've heard that.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good, man.
It doesn't feel good at all. Really bad. Yeah. It's like I show you a painting and you say, like, you should try poetry, I think. So it's an odd thing, but I don't think...
You should be an interior designer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, your art is really making me think that you should paint houses. So it's an odd thing, but... So I thought this would be a good way for that to manifest itself. But then I was just thinking more about it, and I thought, you know, like, maybe that would be good. And I've started to kind of flesh things out, and I think the way it's going to work is we're going to shoot about 10 half-hour episodes that are basically... blurring the line even more between like improv and documentary, and it's going to follow me, but it's also going to follow the band Cave People. I don't know what it's going to be called yet, but it's going to be like a cross between Curb Your Enthusiasm, High Fidelity, you know, maybe some Flight of the Conchords, and like Hard Day's Night.
You're really reaching out to the non-Caucasian audience here.
What do you mean?
So, is the rest of the band into this idea?
Is the rest of the band... Well, the
or
band,
do they know about this?
The rest of the band does not necessarily... Some of them know about it, but not. It's not necessarily a full band project. The show is going to follow me, but it's going to, you know... The band will be involved when they're involved, you know? And I think there's going to be a lot of good shit-talking on the show about, like, you know, musicians that suck and that we hate and, like, how could somebody... so bad get on a stage and etc. and so forth. So it'll be a good medium for me to air my grievances, I think, is going to be the key.
Web series, hopefully a TV. What's the goal?
The goal
is obviously HBO.
Well, the goal is HBO because I feel like, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm is going to go off the air, Flight of the Conchords is going to go off the air, and this is a way for them to kind of fill that niche.
It's just so easy.
It's just so easy. I'm just going to show up with 10 episodes like, look, guys, you don't even have to make it. It's done. Just give me...
I made this on spec.
$50,000? Come on, it's no big deal. Come on, you love me. It's good. So that's the plan. Where that would be ideal, but really what it's going to end up doing is it'll probably be on my website for the band, and it'll be kind of a good promotional vehicle to promote the forthcoming Cave People album, which is going to be recorded in the spring, I think.
This is not what you told me when you initially called me.
No, it's evolving a little bit.
Evolving.
Something about Cave People tends to evolve in my... I don't know
could
why
I,
that
could
is.
Could I talk about when you initially told me what it was going to be about, or no?
What did I tell you?
You told me it was going
to... Oh, about my misadventures with women? Well, that's not out of the picture. It's just...
okay.
That's a large part of the... I consider myself to be...
So you're going to be like Ringo, and that you have the jewel, and everyone's going to be running after you... And they have to kill you to get the jewel from your finger.
You know, it's a little... It's almost like the opposite way. It's like I have this jewel, and I'm like, why doesn't anybody notice that I have this jewel? Why am I sitting at this bar with this huge jewel, and nobody's looking? I am the dark prince of unrequited love. For whatever reason, it's like that is one Petrarchian ideal that I understand. Or maybe it's Petrarchan, I think is how you say it. But I'm...
Can we tell your age?
I'm 22, yeah.
Use big words for a 22-year-old, sir.
Yeah, I was told, I don't know where I was, but I was told by somebody that I talk like I'm in a novel.
You do.
Which I thought was curious.
You do.
And I like novels, so that was okay. And I was also told, I teach in
I'd say a Philip Roth novel.
I've not read any Philip
Roth. I think you'd really like Philip Roth.
Well, we'll investigate. I'm mostly, my novel people.
Let me give you
people,
some before you leave.
Yeah, I'll get some. The big people for me are like Vonnegut and Jim Harrison.
You use bigger words than the Vonnegut characters use.
That's accurate, but, you know, just knowing how to read has made it. When I was 9, I would carry around the Brothers Karamazov everywhere I went so that I could, you know, in hopes that I would read it, but more like Charlemagne used to sleep with books under his pillow in hopes that he'd absorb
them. I did a similar
them.
Thing in freshman year of high school.
Well, yeah.
Not that book, though.
Not that book,
not
yeah.
Not that book.
But where, oh, the other thing that happened was with, in regards to my ludicrous, you know, way of speaking, is that my kids, I teach rock and roll camp in the summer, and I don't remember what happened. Somebody yelled into a mic or something, which is never a good idea.
We're totally different people.
I was on headphones, and they screamed into a mic, and I was very upset.
Were you recording them?
No, we were in the, it's a long story, but... at any rate, one of my kids noted the fact with some amusement that the angrier I get, I just start using million-dollar words, and nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. And I just
if you're working with children, that's
it's great. They're just boggled. They're like, you know, it's like, what? Do you have any notion, some semblance of what kind of behavior I would expect from you at this juncture? And like, it's just they're just like. They don't know what's going on. It's just one big run-on sentence with a thesaurus in hand. So
I think you should have a dream sequence in the TV show where you reenact Dangerous Minds and you use all the words.
I don't know what that is.
You know the film Dangerous Minds from the classic song from Coolio?
I no, that's a little before my time, I think. Sadly.
You were already transcribing Steely Dan.
The only
lyrics,
Coolio
though.
Song
I keep forgetting
I
you're older or younger than me.
Actually, that's a good experience,
like
too.
Like 4.5 years, man.
I went into a library. Yeah, I am a little... You're older. I'm younger. It's a May December kind of thing. But this is great. Remember Gangsta's Paradise?
That's the song I'm referencing.
Okay, right.
I'm
yeah,
referencing.
So I remember I got that soundtrack from the library, and I went in and I'd heard that song in God knows where, gym class or something, and I went into the library and I talked to this very like, you know, prim and proper librarian, and I was saying, I'm looking for some Coolio, and she didn't understand. She was Coolio? Are you looking for Coolio? I think it's Coolio. We couldn't figure out how to spell it. She had no idea. You know, and I just, that's a good memory of me, like, you know.
You never skateboarded?
I skateboarded a little bit, but I mostly used it to take out the garbage cans. I would put it under the garbage and, like, roll it out that way. And just to get from one end of my basement to the other. It was mostly for transportation.
You had such a supportive childhood.
You know, it was more an independent childhood. I didn't have to rebel because I was just under the radar. I was in my basement that I'd basically turned into an office. Well, when I was 9, I started my own company that I called B&K Industries, and that's all I would do. I'd sit at this desk trying to decide what to do next, and, you know, I had a detective agency and a law firm.
Have you ever had an office job? Not counting that.
I've been in an office. I've seen them. I know where they are. I'm sure I would love it. I've thought to myself, like...
I don't think you would.
All I had to do... I think I would excel at that, because I would just... maybe I would hate it.
You would
maybe
hate that. It.
But
you would
I'd
hate
like
it.
To have an office. That would be nice.
I'm just asking.
No, it'd be great.
What are you gonna do after college?
After college, I'm hoping.
Because do you finish up in like 6 months?
No.
Do you
sadly,
have another year and a half.
Sadly, I've got probably another year or so.
Okay.
Depending on the breaks and who I can talk into what, but when I get done with college, the goal is to, you know, work as little as possible.
Then maybe you should be in an office.
Right. Yeah, maybe. No, the goal is like, I think I could actually support myself with like one day of teaching a week, and the rest of it I'm just gonna, you know, hide at one of my parents' house and, you know, read great works of literature and write lyrics and probably, you know, I don't know, waste away. But the goal is just that I would be completely focused on... I've told my mother, if she just gives me a year or two to completely focus on my music and see if you know, that degree of commitment can make it happen. After that, I promise I will go to grad school and become a teacher and do the whole thing that is expected of me. If I can just get that time to flounder and really spend all my time either writing songs or like emailing people like, listen to this record, go see this show, let me play at your club, let me open up for your band, let me whatever, and just really have like, you know, 95% commitment. I'm just going to work on music and take a break to make sandwiches and tombstone pizzas, which I am. I'm good at tombstones.
You love the tombstone
pizza. Well, I just, that's one skill that I have. You got to know what areas
you excel,
you're strong in, and tombstone pizzas are one thing that I'm good at making.
I wish nothing but the best for you, sir.
Well, thank you. I wish nothing but the best for me also.
There you go.
Why would I wish anything else?
We're going to close this with a question from the Kids Book of Question by Gregory Stock, PhD.
Oh, dear. Do you have this picked out in advance?
No, 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 no. This is you, buddy. You need to pick a number between...
I have to ask you a question?
No.
Oh, okay.
Just hold on.
Pick
you need
a number.
From 1 to 260.
140... No. 153. That was the name of my fictional television show.
Your name... It was 153.
No, it was called The 153 Show. It came out at 153, and it lasted for 7 minutes. It was just a break between...
I understand.
The 1 o'clock
I understand.
Show and the 2 show, yeah.
Soap operas.
The 153 Show. Yeah,
AM or PM?
It was wacky. Our theme song was a Thelonious Monk song.
How old were you?
I was probably 11 or 12.
Why do you know Thelonious Monk at 11 or 12?
I don't
know. Are you going to have like a big punk rock phase at like 45?
Doubtful, but it's possible. I wouldn't rule anything out at this point.
You're playing one chord songs, 30 seconds long.
Yeah, it's possible. If I, you know, if something happened to me... a near-death experience, and I came out just going like, really? What's with all these chord extensions? Let me just,
there
just
you go.
Play straight power chords. That's
so much more fun.
It could happen.
There's a reason why power's in front of the word. All right. Number 153. What do you feel your parents should do for you or give you without even expecting to be thanked? For example, cooking meals, buying clothes, or taking places. Do you think they feel you don't need to thank them for these things?
Oh,
that's a weird. That's an awful here. Question for a child. That is not a simple question.
No, that's a little. That's a little.
That's convoluted, man.
Can we? Let's see here. So what?
What
is,
can they do, or what do
what
they
do?
What
do I expect my parents to do for me
without you what, saying thank you?
What do
and
I
it's
expect
okay.
them to give me without me thanking them, and that's
yeah.
okay.
Cooking meals, buying clothes, or taking you places, etc.
That's curious.
Because even when my mom drove me a place, I'd say thank you.
I think this is a more appropriate question, okay? And I'm going to take,
you're just
a, little,
changing the
take
question.
A little license here. No, because the question is, it's flawed. You know it's flawed. I don't. Let's. Oh, is this Gregory Stock?
Gregory
PhD?
Stock, PhD.
Well, wherever you are, I have this issue to take with you. But I think there should always be thanks involved. You know, if you make me a sandwich, I'm never just going to take it and leave the room like that. You know, I don't care who you are. If my slaves did that for me, I still would thank them. I'm very polite.
You're a very polite slave owner?
Yeah, exactly.
That's, as you make a show yeah, similar
yeah,
to
that'd be good.
Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is that there should always be thanks involved, but I think a more accurate question is, what requests can you make your parents that you don't think they can rightly refuse?
Okay, there's
which
a good
is
one.
That, like, you know, like, I think my parents owe me quite a bit. Just because, you know, when you decide to have kids, you know, you're going down that path. You
okay.
know, you know, your life is not your own anymore. And I think my parents owe me to be supportive in whatever ways that they physically can. So I'm very demanding, but I will expect the same of my children. But, you know, I will put this out there that right away they knew what they were dealing with. My mother has gone on record saying that she knew right away that I was not going to be a normal kid because I did not have a first word.
You had a first sentence?
I had a first
diatribe.
Yeah, I had a first monologue. It started and it was, you know, like, I think my first word was probably mom, but it like went on. You know what I mean? It wasn't like mama. It was like, mom, I'm just not sure that this diapers thing is working for me anymore. I think I'd like to, et cetera, and so forth. So that's that.
Thanks for doing this, man.
No problem. It's
all
been
right.
It's been fun.
We're going to end the show with Daniel Knox. Should we end it with the shuffle song? Let's do that. Yeah,
okay.
I don't think I've played it. Daniel Knox was kind enough to write the score for the shuffle.
You could also put some of my tunes in here.
Well, we're going to get to that. Shut the fuck up, sir.
Oh.
Let me get to it.
Oh.
Jesus Christ.
Oh,
you
I'm
had
sorry.
40 fucking minutes. No, I'm just fucking
do it, right. Really? That's
no, insane. We're at minute 39 right now.
This is a minute?
No, you're at minute 39 right now.
Oh, minute 39. Yeah. I thought you said it was a minute 39. I was like, man,
yeah,
time flies when you won't shut up. So that's good.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
No, the reason why we're going to play the Daniel Knox song is because you're going to open for him tentatively.
Tentatively. No,
I'm waiting for your... I asked you about it on Thursday evening.
I said okay.
It's Sunday evening.
I said okay.
All right, well, then you're opening for him in January at the Hungry Brain. It's a Monday. It's the first January Monday. Whew. But sadly, the bear season will be over by that time.
That's possible.
No. There's
is sure there's a 7%
there's a 7% chance if we beat the Vikings twice in the
Well, that did you see that clip on NBC?
We were watching the game together.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't sure if you took
note.
7%.
And if we had won tonight, 28%.
Or maybe it was
a percent, not percent chance, but out of the teams that started the season 4-6, 7% went on to this playoffs.
Yeah, so 5-5 was 26%. 28%.
And then the other.
Yeah, it's not looking good. Sorry, Bears fans. But we're one of you.
Anyways, we're going to close with this song called The Shuffle from the movie The Shuffle that Daniel Knox wrote. And Ben will be opening for Daniel Knox.
Sadly, it isn't a shuffle. That would be the one thing that could make it even better if it actually was a shuffle.
It is sad, though. It's a sad tune. I love it. Anyways, let's plug the show. Tomorrow, this evening, by the time this goes up, it'll be midnight. It's Monday now. This Monday, November 23rd. Is that the right date? You're looking at the calendar.
It's literally
right in front of you.
I don't know.
Yes, it is.
No,
Monday, November 23rd. Stand-up comedy at the Hungry Brain. Tina Ayers. Let me see if I can remember all the names.
She's funny.
Have you seen her?
No.
You have no idea. You don't have to lie. These people are funny.
She's a stand-up comic. They don't just do that.
All right.
She's got to be funny.
Tia is very funny. I saw her about a week ago at Shuba's.
There you go.
Very good.
It's great.
Junior Stopka. Oh, hilarious.
Very funny.
Hilarious.
Very funny.
Some of the greasiest, most beautiful hair you'll ever see.
There you go.
Mike Leibowitz.
Very funny name.
Very funny name. Chad Briggs. Very delightful. One of my favorites.
Funniest Chad I know, definitely.
Yeah, Chad's usually not funny.
Not
this guy
a lot of
knocks
funny
him
Chads. This guy.
Headliner. A former Chicago in front of the show. I miss him dearly. Emerson Dameron.
Emerson.
Doing stand-up.
Like
did
Emerson.
You ever meet Emerson?
I have met Emerson a couple of times.
He's my favorite.
He's a distinguished guy.
He did a reading about
three years ago. Nazi Third Reich flag or something.
Growing up, he thought the Nazi flag was the most badass, and he didn't understand why his parents wouldn't let him have one.
I remember drawing that shit on certain things.
It's a powerful symbol.
Yeah, it's just that's a pagan symbol. That we can't be. Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
that's what he should.
I've had a friend break up with a girl because of that. I've had a friend not be a friend because he wouldn't break up a girl over that Nazi symbol. It's fucked up. Anyways, Emerson will be at the Brain this evening. Do not miss this show. It's a once a year at most event.
Bring your flags.
Bring your flags. Good one, buddy. And you'll come see Ben, and we're going to play. I don't know if you're going to see any cave people. Ben's going to be playing solo. He will not be playing with cave people at the Brain.
This will be a solo, just cave, but just the people. But soon, all our cave people gigs thus far have been in Michigan, so. So we're trying to break into Chicago.
There you go.
We need some help.
Do it slowly. All right, so here's Emerson Dameron tomorrow night, this night at the Brain. Here's a song by Daniel Knox. Thanks to Ben. Go to youmethemeverybody.com. What's the website for the band? Do you have one yet?
There's three websites. They all
really?
Direct to the same
three?
Thing. Just go to benrocksalot.com is the only one right now. Because nobody can
spell
my last
email.
Name. So yeah, that's my screen
email.
Name when I was nine. Instead of Lancelot, it was Ben Roxalot. And so I've just stuck with it in case
Jesus
anybody
Christ.
That knew me when I was nine needed to get a hold of me.
What are you doing? You're
I'm
currently
just,
shuffling
I'm
my notes.
Because
you just shut my
I'm shuffling so that you get to the tune. I'm trying to give
oh,
you
Oh, I get it. I don't think you were meant me to do I just think you were nervous.
I just do this kind of stuff. I flip books
You were
over
playing
all
with
the
Scrabble pen.
I'm playing
pen.
Around. Okay. So anyway, benroxalot.com, cavepeoplemusic.com, benbiltman.com. It's all the same. For now, but...
And if you're on your iPod, that's his name. I spelled it correctly.
That's true.
I hope. All right, yeah. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening.
I live alone in a small room. Might not look friendly, but it's all right. I shake hands and make conversation. Just say Can't you tell me what it's